I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. My food buddies are here. Senior contributor Christopher Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, our regular contributor Alex Province, and we have Jeff Vernon, who is general manager of Chamard Vineyards in Clinton, Connecticut. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
You can tell your friends, no matter where they live, they can listen to the Food Schmooze from anywhere in the world, as many people do, at WNPR.org. All kinds of things coming your way. Jeff has brought us a wine, and we thought we'd experiment and see, as we taste this wine from Chamard, what we might do with it. If you're drinking a wine and you want to use a little of it in your cooking, what would you do? Can we make a pan sauce? What exactly can we do with this wine? We're going to get into that. We have some wild cookbooks that have just come out. Wild on all ends of the spectrum. And one of them includes Mad for Muffins. I don't know. How many of us here are muffin fans? Lori Mack is here, our producer. So everybody,
just
too.
Just the tops.
Nice.
I've heard that before. Okay, so this is a book called Mad for Muffins, 70 Amazing Muffin Recipes from Savory to Sweet by Jean Anderson. She is very good at what she does. And so let me just go through some of these and see what, you know, how the meter works, the applause meter here on the show. Okay, first I came to corn muffins with blue cheese and toasted pecans. Do we think that works?
I was wondering about the blue cheese.
Me too. The pecans sound great.
And I'll just throw this out there now. When it comes to a muffin, I'm a sweet guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I know they're...
You fooled me on this.
Oh, wow. You've got to go down that road, right?
And I'm not talking about a teaspoon of butter.
But you know what? This could be one of those things where if you actually taste it without knowing what's in it, you might really love it. It's just our conscience is sort of saying, hey, this might be weird, but it might be really good.
It would depend on the blue,
well, it has
too,
multiple right? cheeses in it. I'm sorry, Jim?
It would depend on the blue, right? You know, how it presents itself.
Well, she's going with Gorgonzola Dolce, you know, the beautiful...
Beautiful, sweet one.
Yeah. But maybe it's not. I don't know. You can do what you want. All right. So here's another one. Peppery pico de gallo corn muffins.
That sounds good.
So this is cornmeal, flour, pepper, drained canned pico de gallo, or you could use a tomato salsa, a little bit of tomato juice, bacon drippings, and an egg.
All right, Chris, you like this one.
Well, yeah, when you hit the bacon, then now all of a sudden I'm not all sweet.
I saw the salami.
yeah, dripping down. I'm like, once you say bacon, then I'm...
You're in.
Okay, so butter, bacon,
look,
juice.
Here's where we all are. I think we're saying that most people in this room, I maybe give her a little bit more room, but most people in this room seem to like the traditional sweeter muffins. Is that correct?
Well, in this case, the muffin is just a conduit to be able to get the bacon drippings, the egg... Yeah. And the pico de gallo to your mouth.
And
you know, it's a
the muffin was just
fine.
It's
fine, right?
It's just the shape.
But you see, I think what she's getting at here is that these are savory muffins that you can serve with all meals, not just breakfast. So you give me
chili,
right. And sure. one of these muffins, corn a pico de gallo muffin with a bowl of chili, I'd be happy.
Yes.
I'm a happy camper.
But you all got me thinking poppy seeds and lemon.
All right.
the gorgonzola one with a big bowl of pasta would have been good too.
Yeah.
Are you a carmaholic? Okay.
I'm craving.
Here we go. So I'm going to make you happy, Chris. She has triple lemon poppy seed muffins.
Now we're talking. Split it in half. Put, two tablespoons of butter on each half, and then broil it under the broiler until it gets crispy and bubbly.
So here's what's so fascinating about these muffins. She's using lemon verbena.
Oh, wow.
Instead of just the lemon juice. She said it happened to her when she was a kid that the...
You got
to
find it, though. The shock isn't that I don't know what verbena is. I just don't know how you'd find it for your muffin.
Soon.
Put it in the ground.
You just put that in the ground. I grow it in the summer, and it's wonderful.
And we grow the oddball stuff for... for our stuff.
I know. So, I'm going to get to
and
that.
It's, and it's easy to grow, too, I think, that one. I think that one you just put in the ground and just walk away.
No, that is true.
Right? That's the kind of plant.
That's the kind of plant
I do.
And she uses evaporated milk in this, which I think is interesting.
Oh, that can't be bad.
She makes a Pennsylvania Dutch buttermilk muffins with a buttercrumb topping.
There's that buttercrumb topping.
100%, both hands.
Buttercrumb toppings always.
They just have to sound like dessert. I get it. I totally get it.
Come on, the best muffin on the planet Earth.
How about fresh strawberry muffins in July?
Yeah, we're going to be happy.
Strawberry or blueberry, right? The blueberry muffin is the quintessential muffin, don't you think?
That's diner muffin.
With a crumb topping.
Who doesn't love a diner? Next to the poppy seed muffin, I'd have to say the blueberry muffin, for me, is the muffin.
If you're just joining us, summer and the growing season is not so far away. In fact, we are now in the season where it is important to start thinking about putting your peas in. Mm-hmm. So for people, you know, March is that time. But we're not done with our cookbooks, and we've got Jeff Vernon here from Chouinard Vineyards, and we're going to taste a wine, and we're going to talk about what to do with the wine you're pouring for dinner, how to maybe use it for a clever thing during the cooking itself. A couple more cookbooks to tell you about. There's a book out called Epic Mealtime, and we have Harley Morenstein and Josh Elkin. And this is one of those books that is about, this is love it or hate it, crazy, crazy ideas about food, you know, extreme foods. So, for instance, they're cutting some pieces of meat with, you know, saws and stuff like that. So let me just go. Are you Chris?
Totally. Okay. I have two drawers of tools in my kitchen. One is knife and regular stuff. And then I have one that has a hacksaw in it. You got to have tools in the kitchen when you're cutting bones and big pieces of meat.
Yeah, I think the question is what are you cutting with the saw, right? What are you cutting that needs a saw? That'd be extreme.
It's like dinosaur.
We do extreme.
Here's what I'm talking about. This is the kind of extreme cooking that actually drives me a little crazy, but let me just read some of the ideas. There are hash brown balls that are huge like bowling balls. There is bacon cream cheese stuffed French toast, deep fried Dorito cheese sticks, and then it's a question of building. So you might take those and then create one thing from them. You see where I'm going with this? So, for instance, there's a slaughterhouse dish here, which is 5 pounds of bacon, one carton of eggnog, a large bottle of whiskey, cinnamon, brown sugar, 2 large uncut beef tenderloins, this is where the saw comes in, 3 sticks of butter, 3 pounds of baby back ribs, 1/2 liter of cola, 1.5 pounds of ground pork, 10 pork sausages, 2 packs of puff pastry, 5 Yukon Gold potatoes, 5 sweet potatoes, 2 jars of cheese whidge, Wids and 1 package of sliced
ham. All right,
ham.
See now
I'm
these.
Lost.
I don't even know what we're making. I dream like this. See, I don't have the courage to actually go and make it. These are the things dreams are made of. Five pounds of bacon and a bottle of whiskey.
I cannot do this book.
And how many pounds of ribs?
I'm off this book.
Oh my gosh! Here, slide it over. Slide it over.
I'm taking it home.
That's a bedtime read.
Okay.
How many sticks of butter?
Well, it was 5 pounds of something. And I don't know how many sticks of butter.
That's what dreams are made of.
Why do you say that? Let me try and understand this.
I think when I dream about food, I dream these strange, like, I wake up and I write stuff down and I'm like, why did I say Velveeta?
But is
and
it all?
It never ends up anywhere with me. It's just these ideas that are just going through my head. Yeah. And I'm sure some things during the day when I'm cooking come out and
but
make
sense.
But are
they this extreme?
They can be. And again, I don't cook like that, but it's.
But would you eat that?
I don't know. I'm intrigued. Uh-huh. Aren't you intrigued? 2 tenderloins? How many pounds of bacon?
But how many people?
No.
2.
Tenderloin.
Come on. Tender, 2 people.
Tenderloin and bacon. I'm all for. Yeah. You know, adding wrapped in cheese whiz.
Wrapped. Who doesn't love cheese whiz?
I think that's the thing.
He doesn't cook that way. So it's kind of like being on your best behavior at all times, and then every once in a while you need to swear or something.
Yeah, totally. And who doesn't like, come on, Philly steak sandwich is nothing without cheese whiz.
Nothing without great cheese.
It's cheese whiz cheese.
Cheese whiz is not cheese, but it has a place in our culinary vernacular.
Oh, I agree.
For its texture, its velvety texture.
For whatever
texture.
You want to use
Absolutely,
it for.
Absolutely, I agree.
It might not have to be food, but whatever it is, it has a place in here. in my mind. It has a place.
All right. So what I think
of. Brought another bottle of wine. Yeah.
I think this is a performance piece.
Totally.
Book, really.
That's why I want it.
You know, okay. And you have it. It's yours.
Yeah, I think it's a fun read book, not
it's
a
like popular
from,
mechanics
yes,
for chefs.
Yes, it's popular mechanics for chefs.
Okay. So now.
And great
we,
for cardiologists.
Keeping them in business.
So we're going to go to the other extreme. This is a book called A Book of Ideas. So there is on this tiny street in Copenhagen a restaurant called Relay, R-E-L-A-E. And there are these oak tables, bistro-style service, kind of a humble index of ingredients because we're in Copenhagen. In other words, as they say in the book, you're more likely to eat cod skin than caviar in a place like this because this Christian Puglisi is quite meticulous in the way he cooks. He's blowing people's minds, and so he's come out with a cookbook of ideas on a plate. He's playing with food in the way that Michel Bras is in France, in the countryside, where he will go out and forage in the countryside and think, what can I do with pine needles? And he'll do something so interesting. I have friends who've eaten at his restaurant and said, it may sound weird, but the flavors are phenomenal in terms of what he's turning out. But he's using things that we don't usually imagine to eat. So if you want to blow your own mind about what is possible, here it is. This is the book for someone who likes to dream about food. Chris, this goes to you too. Awesome. So two extremes we have for you. All right. We have Jeff Vernon here from Chouinard Vineyards in Clinton, Connecticut. He has brought wine for us to taste. He's back on the show. We're going to talk about what goes on at a vineyard as the season starts to heat up. What is happening there now? What are we going to do with some wine that we're serving for dinner? What can we do to help us actually make the dinner with that same wine, just a little bit of it? We're going to brainstorm about that right here on the Food Schmooze. I'm Faith Middleton. I hope you'll make a charitable contribution to feed the hungry. More mouthwatering conversation and fun here on the Food Schmooze. We'll be right back.
Beans. Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night. Beans. I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night. I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night. I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night. That's what Beans said to Cornbread.
I'm Faith Middleton. The Food Schmooze Party here on WNPR is heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9, Saturdays at noon. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to our talented crew, senior contributor Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, regular contributor Alex Province, Eugene Amatruda, Marion Roy, senior producer Lori Mack, and producer Jonathan McNichol. And our special guest, Jeff Vernon, is here from Chouinard Vineyard in Clinton, Connecticut. And thank you first and foremost for listening. I don't know about any of you, but as we get to this point in the year, it's not that I don't want comfort food still, but there is this feeling where I want brightness in my food, some kind of snap in it. Green vegetables for you? Okay, I'm talking about intense flavors now. I want grapefruit segments and juice in my food. I want heat. I want lots of lemon. There's some kind of signal that my body...
Like acidity. Vitamin C, maybe.
Acidity and heat and...
Vitamin D.
The sun.
I always feel like when you start moving mulch and the little plants underneath are sort of white and just beginning to turn green. I always feel like that. Like, move the mulch, give me some sunlight.
So as we mentioned, the peas are going in for people, you know, to get them started in time because they come out early in the season. And there are other things that go in now. Chris, do you know what they are in March? What goes in?
I know a lot of my farmers start stuff in the greenhouse right now, you know, and just get the
the seedlings.
Yeah, get the seedlings ready if they're going to transplant stuff. You know, it still can get cold, so they don't go too crazy about putting stuff in the ground. But they start stuff in the hoop houses, right, and under tarps and stuff, and then they'll just let them go, or they'll start them in the greenhouse and then transfer them into the fields later on.
All right,
you get a good jump if you start this early.
In addition to tasting wine with Jeff and figuring out a pan sauce or something to do with this wine, plus we have Alex's mother's recipe, I'd love to know, Jeff, what goes on at the vineyard in mid-March. What do you do there?
So mid-March, we are emptying out our stainless tanks, getting ready for our grapes to come in from Chile, which will be harvested sometime in April, probably arrive to us beginning of May. So that's the focus that's going on in the cellar. Upstairs, our chef Matt, executive chef, is working with Jim, who does all of our garden and our planning and our execution outside with respect to that production. So we're trying to match what our menu will be with the pounds of greens or vegetables that need to come out of the garden, all of the herbs, all of the things like the verbena that you know you couldn't source if you wanted to go into our menu.
So you try to use as many greens, as locally grown things grown on your property as you possibly can in Clinton, Connecticut.
When it comes to the greens, it's actually easier to grow them than it is to source them locally for us, just because getting $12 of greens from somebody, nobody wants to drive them to you. You don't want to go there. We don't have a great cooperative like a Rhode Island does or Iowa mm-hmm. has, where everything is aggregated and then brought to the restaurants from a local source. So we have a huge garden and we have a huge herb garden and we grow all that.
So we're talking about Chamard in Clinton, Connecticut, with Jeff Vernon, the general manager. But is anything going on with the vines at this point?
They're dormant, so there's a lot going on.
Trimming,
but you can't tell. We're pruning, so we're just finishing pruning now. And securing the vines to the trellis.
The pruning means you're getting rid of the dead branches,
no,
or are you trying to cut back?
You actually reduce probably 90% of the buds that are on the plant. You cut back to about 10% of what's there. So all of those canes that you saw when you came through
that makes more grapes, all gone.
Yeah. Now, the plant, you can't overcrop, especially here in Connecticut.
Fewer grapes.
Right. So we reduce the load on the vine, and then it grows, you know, forces a green growth, and you try to get a balance between the amount of vegetative growth and the fruit growth, and not too much fruit, not too much vegetative.
How different are the grapes if you didn't prune versus you did prune? Do they change the grape?
You potentially wouldn't get anything ripe. You could potentially kill your vines. By overcropping, you could actually force them into a following year where they don't set any fruit at all because they're just trying to, after having struggled so hard to grow too many grapes, the subsequent year they could shut down their production.
So, Jeff, where did you work? What's your history in the wine world? Where did you work before this?
Well, my history as it relates to grapes is I grew up farming grapes on a grape farm in western New York, right on Lake Erie, right next to Pennsylvania. And so I grew up a farmer. I hated it. I went to college to do something else. And then at the end of college, I decided I wanted to go back and grow grapes on my parents' farm. So I went to Cornell after Ithaca, and I studied viticulture at Cornell. And then went back home and then decided I was right. I did not want to grow grapes. So after after some years in western New York, I then moved to Connecticut
and
was self-employed for a long time. And here I am back farming grapes. So
well, so much more.
Yeah,
you're a bit more now. Overseeing.
Yeah, yeah.
You can run, but you can't hide.
So I'm still back after you prune. Are you saving all the twigs and using it to, like we in Spain, we'd cook chuletas, like lamb chops, over all the little sticks and vines you save. You make a really hot fire.
So a good friend of mine for a fundraiser, Tyler Anderson, had cooked on open flame with the grape vines from the vineyard some chicken, and found out that the grape vines really added a sweet sort of flavor into the chicken. So we pick up all the large and small pieces, but the large pieces that are in the vineyard From the pruning, we keep and we cook on it. Yeah. In the summer, our farm kitchen, we call our out, we have an outside kitchen that serves the barn. We have a tasting room in the barn and music in the barn, and we have an outside kitchen, our farm kitchen, and we cook oftentimes with the grape trunks.
That's great.
So I was going to say, I'll come pick them up if you just leave them out. Load up my station wagon.
He actually got a load the last time he was there.
It's amazing. It's different than regular charcoal. If you just take one of those opening grates and you take really nice lamb chops, you put them on olive oil, salt, and pepper, but they need to be thin enough, and pile up the prunings, you light them on fire. It gets so hot so quickly, but you just basically sear both sides.
Nice.
And that with a bottle of red wine, I mean, it's classic vineyard food, but I love it.
That's great.
So good.
My family had a place in Colorado. It's still family there, but we would have all the neighbors would come over and we would do steaks out on the grill. And I have never tasted steaks like this. And I thought, what is it? What is causing this? And it was that my brother-in-law would use as the wood the dried cottonwood that had gone all over the farm and the land.
Wow.
And he'd gather it all up and he'd make the steaks on that cottonwood, and it gave them a flavor that I cannot describe to you. It was unbelievable.
It makes a difference.
Cowboy steak. Yeah.
Famous
cowboy
steak. Yeah. So the vines are dormant. You're pruning them back. When does the action start with the vines again? What's the next period?
The bud break, grapes are one of the last things to, which is fortunate for us because with respect to frost that we were talking about earlier or a late freeze, the grapes are one of the last things to bud. So in May, they'll start to have some activity and flower.
That's always fun to see too.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And your goal is to get them ripe by when's Verazin and
Verazin is in July.
I'm looking like fish. Well,
when they turn color.
Okay, yeah, what's so Verazin?
When they change color, Verazin's, typically the end of July.
Yep.
And then
I'm being a geek, sorry.
Yes.
I thought he was asking for a raisin. When they turn like raisins.
Well, because he's racing to get these things ripe by the end of the season. It's stressful.
So so the degree days, it's not something you can control, but that's the clock that the grapes are
on.
So and then you start to, not have any effective growing temperature in October. Yeah. So you're
done.
Yeah, you're thinking by Halloween you'll want them out of there.
How different is it year to year? Because we have weird seasons.
Tremendously different in Connecticut. It's one of the challenges that we have, really the biggest challenge that we have.
So. Yeah, every year is different.
Yeah, tremendously different.
Well, we're wishing you the best of luck on that. So
let's pour
a little bit of what have you got? You've got, we asked you to bring back the Estate Chardonnay from Chamard. And again, these grapes are from what part of California?
These are our grapes.
The estate
grape is the Chardonnay. Yep.
Okay, so we do like this.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is a good food one.
It is. So
it's a good non-food one, too. Yeah.
Here's the game to play. Jacques and Julia, was interviewing them on stage one night. It was about 500 people in New Haven, Julia Child and Jacques Papin. And we're all having a debate about how good the wine has to be when you're using it in cooking. And so there was one side that said, it was silly to use really good wine to cook with. And the other side saying, actually, you can taste if it's a really bad wine. Or, it does make a difference. So I don't know where everybody stands on this.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. In my opinion, if you live in a country like France where most wine is wholesome, the idea is you can use any of their wholesome, even simple wines. In our country where if you make that broad statement like you can use any wine, now you're talking about stuff that's made that has junk in it, that's crappy, that you chemicals that you don't want to put in your cooking. However, if it's a wine that we drink and Matt and I didn't get to it and there's a half a bottle left and it's been sitting on the counter for 2 weeks, I wouldn't drink it because it's oxidized, but I would absolutely cook with it. So the point is, you can use a wine that's oxidized. You can use a wine that you would have drunk at the beginning. Maybe it's sat around. If it's corked, like it smells musty, throw it away. You can't cook with it. But if it's like a sweet garbage wine, like someone brings you something and it's junk, I wouldn't put that near my food.
Okay. And as we all know, that it's some vineyards, and I'm not talking about Chamard because they're very careful about what they put in the wine. Junk goes in, as Alex said. We don't want it near us. So you kind of have to pay attention to this. Chris, what do you think?
And see, in my school, it's more a what am I doing with it? So there are some really cheap, wholesome wines coming from like upstate New York, which I wouldn't drink because they're so acidic, they almost hurt your mouth. But if I'm looking to put acid as the ingredient in – so in other words, wine to me is not just, oh, you add wine and I don't know what it does in there. Mm-hmm. I'm consciously thinking about what I want out of the wine in the dish as it is reducing, because when you reduce it, it's going to intensify in flavor. So if I want a sweet note to be added to that, I may look at a wine and say, oh, this is a really sweet wine. I don't really like to drink it, but it's a wholesome wine and I want to add a sweet note to this dish or whatever I'm making, then I'm going to reach for a sweet wine. So mm-hmm. again, to me, it's more a thought process of what you want the wine to accomplish in the dish.
Okay, let's say that we have a bottle of this Chardonnay from Chamard in Clinton, Connecticut. Here it is. And we're going to pour this either before the meal or maybe on into the meal itself. We're either baking in the oven some chicken with lemon, or we're sauteing chicken breasts on the stovetop. How are we going to use this wine? Would you make a pan sauce with this?
I would make a pan sauce of this only if...
Jeff, what is this a bottle? Roughly, just kind of rough.
Probably $60. In the restaurant.
So when you buy it to cook with.
The restaurant, yes. Yeah. And for Chamard, that's where you get the wines.
Yeah, right.
So we're not going to be cooking with
this. This is our most easily most expensive wine, one of our most expensive wines.
Okay. No,
because of what Alex said. Now, growing up, I always watched my mom get the wine from the same place, mm-hmm. under the sink. And what was the wine under the sink? Big jug. It was cooking wine. Yep. And what was cooking wine? Mom and Dad had a bottle of wine for dinner. We each got a little, you know, my mom called it a schluck, you know, just a little sip.
Yep.
And then if the bottle didn't get finished.
Yep, you save it.
There was a funnel. The wine went in the bottle under the sink.
All together.
Yep. All together. It was this mishmash of wine.
And it could stay there for a long time.
Because you're looking for an acidic note sometimes when you're cooking with
but
wine.
But it doesn't necessarily turn into vinegar. Yeah. No. It just oxidizes.
It just oxidizes.
But I'm not putting a $60 bottle of wine into my pan.
No, I'm just saying if you didn't finish it, like he said, if you had and it sat
that
too long.
That is so unlikely.
I'm with you. This wine is never going to make it a couple tablespoons isn't going to kill anybody.
Wine, you know, from my standpoint, wine in cooking is an ingredient like anything else, right? So you want it to be the best quality of whatever you want it to be going in. And maybe it is a sweet wine and it's an inexpensive wine and that's what you're looking for. That's fine. And at the same time, if you're only going to put in, a few ounces or a quarter cup or something like that, and it's what you're going to be drinking. It would only complement your food if you're going to use it as a reduction at the end of your pan to put a quality wine in there.
And if I'm doing a $100 a person wine dinner, then that's what I do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I have to circle back to you, though.
If I'm cooking at home, I am not sacrificing two tablespoons. I'm not sacrificing a teaspoon of this.
Wait, Chris, you're the one.
I got something somewhere in my house I could pour
I'm
into
drinking
the pan.
It.
Right? Don't you have something in your house you can pour in the pan?
But okay, let's say we have a wine that's been sitting on the counter that we haven't finished. Does it matter if it's red or white most of the time? Do you think it does when we're going to make a pan sauce?
It depends what you want it to look like. If you add red, it's going to make your sauce dark. If you want to preserve, if it's a chicken
This is more aesthetics than it is flavor.
I think this always goes back to the same thing. Cooking is not this rocket science thing that we try to make it out to be sometimes. Sometimes it's as easy as that. If red wine is going to make it a different color.
And your parents mixed red and white together in that jug.
And then it was just whatever.
But it was rosé sauce.
It was rosé sauce.
Okay, so we'll wait to the other side to tell you how to make a pan sauce if you are, say, sautéing a chicken breast or a pork chop, and how to do something really, really quick. And then we have Alex Province's dish, and we're going to hear about Jeff's wife, who's a real cook in the family. We're having a good time here on the Food Schmooze, and we're so glad you're joining us. Okay, here we go. Please support your local food growers and food makers, and of course you can find the food, wine, recipes and cocktails that we feature right now or anytime online at the Faith Middleton foodschmooze.org. More delicious conversation after a quick break. Please stay with us.
Hello, cat. I just got back, and I'm looking for that place they call the Chicken Shack. They say it's fine as wine, and it's really on a ball. No windows, no doors, it's just a hole in the wall.
Sausage in the pot. I'm gonna flavor it with okra, cayenne pepper to make it hot. You know life is what we make of it, so beautiful or so white.
I'm Faith Middleton with the gang, and this is the Food Schmooze Party coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR, and to join the conversation with us on Facebook, search The Faith Middleton Show. I'm in the studio for this edition with Alex Province and Lori Mack and Chris Prosperi and Jeff Vernon of Chouinard Vineyards in Clinton, Connecticut. And we're just going to talk now, because we were saying we just tasted their delicious Chardonnay from Chouinard. And these wines are not at liquor stores, but at the vineyard itself. So it's a little bit different the way they do this. And they have a bistro there where you can, they have tasting areas where you can just go and taste, enjoy. They're open 7 days a week. You can buy bottles of wine or drink wine by the glass or buy wine to go with your meals there, lunch and dinner. So having said that, let's say we're sautéing either a pork chop or a chicken breast in a pan. I, for one, am not – I'm drinking every drop of this $60 bottle of wine. I am not putting it into my pan sauce. But let's say I have a leftover wine or some cooking wine, whatever it is. Well, how do we do it? How do we make a pan sauce with this, Chris Prosperi?
If I'm going to do a pan sauce, you got to think about what you're going to make. So if it's a piece of chicken or if it's a piece of light piece of fish like a sole or a salmon, sauté that first. So get your pan very hot.
So let's make it chicken because we're going to have crispy bits at the end.
Yeah, I like chicken. All right, so chicken. So let's say chicken breast. So a nice thin piece of chicken breast. And I always like to do thin, even pieces. Pound them out so they're all the same thickness all the way through. Cooks more evenly, cooks faster. And you can do a couple different things with chicken. You can even do an egg dip. So you would do a little salt and pepper on the chicken breast. And then you would just take it and put in a little bit of flour. And then you would just dredge it in some just whipped egg. So it would have a nice coating of egg. And then you take your pan, put it on the stove, put some oil in the pan, get it on like medium-high heat. And then very carefully, once you dip the chicken in the pan, lay it down in the hot oil. Mm-hmm. And you'll see that will form like a little crust on the outside. So you saute that on both sides, maybe a minute and a half, 2 minutes, depending on the thickness, on each half. Then you're going to remove it from the pan.
The chicken.
The chicken. And then you can do a couple different things here. You could take some chopped shallot and add it, or chopped onion or garlic, depending on which way you're going. Then you're going to add your wine. So a couple tablespoons, you know, quarter cup. Tip the pan towards you, add the wine, and then you sort of let the wine run across the pan. And then with a spoon, if there's any bits, and like you said, those little brown bits and stuff, you scrape those up. And then you can just let it reduce a little bit and then swirl in a little whole butter
so
at the end.
So you cook off the alcohol.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that I do is sometimes I won't even do these onions or anything you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I will just do that splash of wine and one pat of butter. It adds a dimension of richness to it. And then we have this instant pan sauce. Mm. And we drizzle that either over the chicken or put it on the plate and put the chicken on top of it.
Beautiful.
Or if you have rice or couscous, you might drizzle it on that. And there you go. You're all set.
You can do a little cream, too.
A little lemon.
A little lemon. Sure. Lemon zest if you have a little zester add in
that
there.
That is restaurant-worthy pan sauce right there.
Yeah. And simple.
It's so easy. Yeah. So easy.
And just remember, when you're adding the butter off the heat, right, because the fat will break out of the butter if it gets too hot. So you want to just hit it with the wine and then take the pan off the heat and sort of swirl in that butter.
And you certainly don't even have to bread the chicken if you want to just brown it on both sides. You're going to get the same crispy bits, that kind of thing. Okay, and then I would be pouring the Chamard Reserve.
Well, I'm back if you're just adding a little bit of wine. I'm the dissenting voice here with the yeah. quality of the wine. Yeah. If you're just adding the wine and you're just adding the butter and it's off the heat,
yeah.
it's straight up wine, right? You're not reducing it. You don't think you can make the argument it's okay to come out of the underneath the sink in that situation.
A couple tablespoons. Pour
in some good wine yeah. and drizzle that on.
You know, anytime we're doctoring up spaghetti sauce or pasta sauce, you know, the stuff that's still in the jar, I always have a bottle of wine, whether it's white wine or red wine. I pour it in, put the top back on the jar, and I shake it, and then I pour out the wine, and now you clean your jar. You're not sure. wasting any tomato sauce.
And it adds a little yeah. dimension to the sauce.
Yeah, it's a good
so
idea
here
too.
Is a question, though, that I have for you, Chris, because you like food science.
Yeah.
I do add a little red wine to tomato sauce sometimes, but okay. then when I think about the science of this, I think wine is acidic, mm-hmm. and tomatoes are acidic. And so what am I doing? Am I yeah. expanding the dimension of flavors, or am I, you know?
See, you had a good point months and months ago about doing a sauce like with tomato and adding vodka to it instead. And that would be a little bit better than adding an acidic wine, because you are – adding
or
acid
vermouth.
To acid or vermouth, something that has some sweetness to it maybe.
Uh-huh.
If you're looking for to have a little bit of a sweeter tomato sauce at all. Like, again, we use these as ingredients to do something, right? It's not just adding to splash in there and not just to get the brown bits off the bottom. But as you add that in there, you get – a more intense flavor, because just adding that couple tablespoons into that hot pan, you're going to reduce that and you're going to get more intense flavor. So if it's a high acid wine, you're going to have even more acidity. So that's going to add acidity to your tomato sauce.
But again, I'm not going to use so much of my vodka that it would
no
that
acid,
I would
yeah.
need it
yeah.
no,
but
to really rinse
vodka,
out that
the
jar.
The quality about, of the vodka yeah, matter?
No. the thing about alcohol is a flavor extractor. Remember what vanilla is, right? Vanilla extract. They use alcohol to extract flavors. So it's a proven fact that when you add – that's why that tomato a la vodka sauce or whatever it is.
Vodka
is so popular, because it does intensify the flavor of the tomatoes.
Mm.
So there's something to it, to adding a little bit of vodka or a neutral spirit to
okay.
something like tomato sauce.
And at the same time, Alex, I love your idea of using that to kind of rinse the jar out and go into the sauce. It, for some reason, I wish I understood the science, that wine does not triple the intensity of the acid in the tomatoes.
Am I allowed to be geeky?
Okay, go ahead. Sure.
So wine has a different kind of acid. It's tartaric acid. And then tomatoes have citric acid. So and our bodies taste acids differently. So a citric acid is like eating a Sour Patch Kids or something. And tartaric acid's actually quite nice. And
what
you'll
a
like
good
it.
Lesson. Yeah. That's great.
And that's
Thank
what we're
you.
Tasting in this
Thank
one,
you.
Right? Is the tartaric acid.
Yeah, you're tasting tartaric acid.
Okay. Before we get to Alex's mother's recipe with chicken, Jeff, you are married to Robin Desjardins, and I know she's the real cook in the family, and
That's
you
right.
have lots of equipment in your kitchen at home. Is there a thing that she makes where you just can't get enough of it, and you think, oh, please, can we have that again?
Actually, having it tonight, keep talking about chicken and stitches, yeah. Jacques Pepin recipe, chicken Provence, pretty straightforward. It's got a reduction in the pan.
Provençal flavor.
Yeah, it's great.
That you can't get enough of that.
That's right.
What time's dinner?
I don't know.
I'm sure we have business to discuss.
I want to see pictures of his kitchen, though.
Yeah, and
right?
where do you keep all the equipment?
You know, actually, it's funny, pictures yeah. of the kitchen. Yeah. We have actually two kitchens, a front room and a back room that have kitchens in them.
Very
and
cool.
The front kitchen, which is really nice, the house was built in 1830, so or 1880, excuse me. So it has a fireplace in the kitchen. So
Very
and
cool.
there are no upper cabinets in that part of the kitchen. There's just a painting that stretches the whole length there, and so everything gets put back in like a Tetris, you know, thing back into all of these cabinets in the lower and in,
there's
and
no
in
upper
the back.
Cavern.
Yeah, so. So when it comes out,
and only Robin knows.
Oh, I can't do it.
You can't
oh,
even go in there.
I do the dishes,
yeah.
right? But when she comes down and the dishes are done,
yeah.
they're just all the countertops are covered with dishes. I'm like,
so,
I can't handle this. I don't even know where it goes.
So when you met Robin, what you know that first moment when you're at someone's house and they cook for you, Is this a case where she learned over time during your relationship, or was she great?
Oh, no. She came into the relationship with the
skill set. And
so
what was the first time?
Smart
grade.
I just provide
Did you
tools.
Do that on
what
purpose?
What happened? So you ate, she cooked a meal for you, and
was,
did you say?
It may have been this chicken Provence. I mean, it's a staple Follow in our house. Dish. It's That's super awesome. Simple. You can prep it in the morning and come home and... You know, pop it in the pan.
So you reached in your pocket, took out a diamond, and that was
it. Almost.
Well, I've met her. She really does seem just full of life and wonderful.
Yeah,
so
and
it only gets better when I hear she can cook so well.
Do you guys drink wine with every dinner?
Yeah, you know, I'm amazed that people don't drink wine or something every day. I mean, I guess a lot of people don't, which I've become shocked to
Well, I drink learn. Their yeah. amount, so all equals out.
Well, you know, people, I think, get worried about calories or getting tired in a way that alcohol makes people tired mm-hmm. sometimes, just turns of blood sugar. And so there isn't that European tradition of course, you have a glass or two or a half a bottle of wine with every dinner.
Right. Well, there is in my house, you know. So.
Yeah.
And I think it's different when you have it with food, right? When you drink wine without food, it affects you differently than drinking a glass or two of wine with a meal. It doesn't hit you
like Faith,
that.
You bring up a good point as far as these drier wines have a lot less sugar, so you can drink them and you don't feel...
White wines have more sugar, right, Jeff, than red wines
No, not
do?
Necessarily.
Well, they have more carbs.
Sugar is a function that begins in the grape, and then when you create... alcohol, you go through an alcoholic fermentation, the yeast is eating the sugar. Then you can either put sugar back in or you can stop the fermentation before all the sugar's out of it. So in the case of the ones we make at Chamard, outside of a dessert wine, there is essentially no sugar or there isn't any sugar in our wines.
Because you're not starting with a lot.
It's funny, I just went to a science site. Yeah. They were doing scientific analysis of wines and said they thought there was more sugar, more carbs in white wine than in red wine.
Well, a lot of times from a palate standpoint, people prefer, you know, the bracing acidity because you're not sending most whites through a mallow.
You're talking about malolactic fermentation,
right? So sugar balances the acidity that's in the wine and gives it a better mouthfeel, a softer feel to what we're talking about, the two different acids and the way that it feels in your mouth. So sugar will offset a high citric flavor or a high acidity. And most people, not necessarily maybe the people that are listening to, you know, your radio show who are into food, most people like wine that just drinks really easily and they perceive a little, you know, 1 or 2% sugar in there as an easier drinking wine.
Uh-huh. Jeff, first of all, thank you so much for coming back on the show.
Oh, it's always great
so
to see you
great
guys,
to so, see you yeah. too. Jeff Vernon, General Manager of Chamard Vineyard in Clinton, Connecticut. They're open 7 days a week. Wine, food for lunch and dinner, music. It's a really great hangout place. Alex, your mother and her chicken recipe is, what do you have?
So this actually, my mom learned it from my grandmother. So visiting my grandmother in Spain, she would basically take chicken into 8 pieces, salt and pepper, and then in a big pan would brown each side in a little bit of olive oil. You take the chicken out, and then you crush some garlic that you would add more olive oil to the pan, add the garlic, sort of brown it a bit, add the chicken back in, and now add a bottle of white wine. And, you know, this is simple peasant white wine that you'd find in Spain. So it hasn't been barrel aged. So it's, you know, Tartaric and Malic and, you know, just
What
nice.
Does that mean for the
Well,
rest
it's
of
just
us?
Pretty acidic, like you were saying, Chris,
just
white
a step,
wine.
Step removed from vinegar.
Yeah, bright.
Young.
And then all
young.
Of a sudden, now you stew the chicken for a couple of hours. And all nice. Of a sudden, the gelatin comes out of the chicken, the sauce thickens up, the acidity from the white wine sort of softens, the garlic infuses everything, you can throw some thyme in. And then now you serve it as a stew, and we'd have it in a bowl, and that with some crusty French bread, the juice is almost as better than
the
chicken.
Chicken itself,
wow.
yeah.
You know, and these memories of it's something so simple can taste so good.
How much
so
of that
good.
Young wine did you put in the white
I'm
wine?
I'm sure they, I
a
think,
whole bottle
I think
probably,
my,
right?
my grandpa drank a full liter bottle a day, and like Chris was,
whatever
so
was
just
left.
The bottle. They cook in how big it is.
You know, it's ubiquitous. Wine in these Mediterranean countries is in everything, and so You know, and you go to all, you know, the grannies, their refrigerators, they're loaded with alcohol. No wonder why I love it.
Oh, this is really terrific.
Cool, thank you.
The challenge is the giant braising pan, though. This is what comes into gear,
right? I was
going
to say like a Le Creuset or something.
But somewhere underneath in your kitchen
is
one or two.
I actually have brought back the giant pans from Dominican Republic, the huge aluminum pans down there. And I've brought sets of those. Back and again, it fits into the Tetris puzzle. You got to cook paella and something huge, right? Yeah. If you're going to make a paella. Right?
But here's the thing with that pan. I have one of these giant pans that's the size of this big chair that I'm sitting in, and you can't arrange the. There's no way to put it on the stove.
You cook it outside on top of a grill
or a paella cooker.
There are multiple burners on the stove together, depending on what your layout.
Well,
the stove
is,
right?
Then there are big
hot spots.
Hot spots, and then there are cold spots. And so it's
when I think of my grandmother's kitchen, the knives that she had were so simple. Her pots and pans are so simple. She uses like a gas little stove. But the food that came out of my grandmother's kitchen was so unbelievable. All I think of her is with her robe sitting.
I tell my young cooks all the time, if you blame the equipment, you're out of here. Everybody wants all this fancy equipment. But if you can't come into my kitchen and do a test run for me without touching all the toys, I give you a simple pan. And if you can't cook in a simple pan, all the toys that's
aren't
going
to help
you. That's not going to help you. You gotta know how to cook the simplest thing, and then you can expand. But if you don't know that basic thing, that's why the grandmothers were the best cooks, right? Because it wasn't about the toys and the gadgets. It was just about good ingredients and what that chicken. My mouth is watering on that chicken. What was there? Two ingredients in there. Three with the olive oil.
I wondered if it would end up being a version of vinegar chicken. Remember Roy Ip came in from
Epic Food
Cafe?
Yeah, and that was amazing chicken.
I wonder if this is kind of a version of that. When we led a food and wine tour, I took a whole bunch of listeners through France, and Lori Mack was with me, and we did this whole tour. And we were eating at these, multi-star Relais and Chateau properties through Burgundy. And we said to the chefs ahead of time, they had their menus, which were very sort of modern. And we said, we are requesting from you what your mothers and grandmothers made. They were just, flabbergasted. We have our stars based on this menu right now. We said, we know, and we so appreciate that, and that's why we're coming to you, but we really want you to cook for us what your grandmother made. Mm. And they all did it.
And probably had a great time doing it, too,
unbelievable food.
It's the food that inspired them to cook in the first place.
I mean, there were eggs that were poached in a red wine.
Oh, I haven't had that. That sounds good.
Red wine and butter sauce.
How simple.
So unbelievable.
Some of the best dishes I've had in my life still go to the most simplest things, right? Doesn't have to be that much.
But their ingredients are so fresh.
That's the thing. When you have a lot of toys and you do a lot of things, you don't have to use the top ingredients because that kind of gets lost in all the stuff.
Is it possible to beat a great grilled cheese?
No.
I mean, if it's
you use good local cheese and a great bread.
And butter.
And good butter.
Oh, I mean, you just can't beat it.
And a cast iron skillet.
And that's not a fancy tool.
Yeah.
Right? That's just you can get it at the tax sale. 50 cents. That's where I got my life.
I don't know much to you, but my cast iron pots didn't cost 50 cents.
I got mine years ago at a tag sale.
Absolutely.
I got a whole set of them. $100
a pop.
Yeah. Well, people used to give them away. Yeah. No one wanted them.
We had them sandblasted.
Remember when you could go into a hardware store and get Lodge?
Yeah. You still can.
You can get it, but it's not $5 anymore.
My last, again, we talk about my kitchen is filled with all these incredible tools, but the tools. In general, I'm thinking about it, are quite simple. But if you need a cast iron pan to braise something in and you go to the hardware store, it's $112. And I'm like, no, I just wanted it cast iron.
People used to give them away.
You know what to do? You have to go to one of these camping stores. I think that they haven't really jacked up the prices quite so much.
Or Army-Navy.
Army-Navy.
Buried back there. Now I feel bad because I have two cast iron pans and I left outside all winter.
No, seriously, the ones I got were so in such bad shape. I took them to a sandblaster. He did a quick zip over the top of them. Brand new.
Wow. Did you lose some thickness on it?
And it was 50 cents. Who cares if I lost a little bit? I didn't pay $125. I paid 50 cents.
Good for you.
And I've had them. And like I said, these will last forever.
great to have you all on the show. The Food Schmooze on WNPR airs Wednesdays at 3 and 9, Saturdays at noon. We are online anytime. Find the recipes, food products, restaurants, value wines, easy cocktails right now or anytime at faithmiddletonfoodschmooze.org. Here's to pleasure, my friends, and remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to my